I went to see The Complete Word of God, abridged, of course, a few months ago in my local theatre. And I have to say, I've never laughed so much in all my life at everything I went to see. And looking around the auditorium, everybody was laughing. People I recognised who were either atheists and even churchgoers were rolling around with laughter. It was really, really funny. I'd highly recommend it. And I'd have to say that all the women on stage with sexy long legs, a friend of mine who came with me, thought it was one of the men playing it. I mean, I ask you.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Thanks for subscribing or for streaming or for downloading and listening on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 120, White House Insider. Reed, we've talked many times about our friend Mike Burton, who worked in the Clinton White House as the assistant to the chief of staff of Al Gore, and here we are in Columbus with Mike Burton.
Yeah, well, when the Reduced Reader newsletter came out a couple of weeks ago, I never know who's on our email list and who isn't.
No, good point.
And we haven't sent out a lot of stuff over the last couple of years, and so I thought, well, this is a good email. I'm just going to forward it to people who I think might be interested and ask them if they're interested to sign up. Yep. So I forwarded it to Mike, who hadn't heard that we were coming to Columbus.
And he lives in Columbus.
Yes, he lives like how many blocks from the theater?
About four blocks.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. So much for the marketing.
Yeah.
tell us all the story of how, A, you got into politics and how you started working for Al Gore in the Clinton White House.
Well, I'd have to begin by noting that I thought I'd gotten a personal email from Reed and, hey, Mike, we're going to be in Columbus. And what I find out now is he didn't even know what was, you know, who was on the list. That's the critical part of the story.
No, I knew I would. You know, I was personally sending it to you along with a couple of hundred other very close friends.
I'd worked at the transition from the first Bush to Clinton.
Okay.
And one of the people who I served under got a job in the White House working for Al Gore.
But going back, how did you get into politics to begin with? How did you get to even be working for a guy who was part of the transition team?
I got my start by being the coffee boy at the Salt Lake City office of Carter for President, where I had two jobs. One, to make sure that the coffee was always ready. The other was to help organize volunteers as they made signs, and that was parlayed into an expert job, checking sure that the signs had been handed out properly at the National Education Association conference, where President Carter, or soon to be President Carter, announced the creation of the Department of Education. And my contribution to that was finding a volunteer who was holding a sign that said "Amy for First Daughter" at the education conference, where daughter was misspelled as D-A-U-T-E-R.
And I believe in the 1976 election in Utah, virtually dozens of people voted for Jimmy Carter.
It was at least double that, so the estimates are better than that. Yeah.
So you had mad skills, as the kids say.
I was able to spot a misspelled daughter from across the hall.
And you said your first job, was this your first political job, was actually here in Columbus?
My first paying job, where I was inadvertently given a desk and a phone, was here in Columbus.
Okay. And what was your title here?
I don't recall my title. I was some kind of analyst. My job was to research the relationship between Ohio and Canada.
You were the Canada boy.
I like to call myself the Canada guy.
And did you ever visit Canada in that position?
I didn't, but I kept up on the news stories coming out of the Toronto papers.
Oh, that's too bad, because I was going to ask. Well, when you were up there, did you drink Canada dry? But
I've never been dry when I visited Canada.
There you go.
There you go.
All right. So then, how did you parlay this tangential at best experience?
And Austin means that in the best possible sense.
The experience with the Department of Education under soon-to-be President Carter into the position of high authority and grandeur in the Clinton White House.
Well, If I may look up tangential before you run this, I would appreciate the opportunity. But in the meantime, I had decided that teaching required, at best, reading books and talking to people about them. And I decided that I wanted to get a PhD and perhaps be a professor. At that time, I wanted to write a dissertation on the Supreme Court confirmation process. I had a girlfriend who had a roommate who had a best friend who was the internship coordinator for Senator Kennedy, and I used that connection to get in Senator Kennedy's office, and, as they say, history.
Wow.
Did he drive you anywhere?
I took the metro to work. Thank you.
So you started to work for Senator Ted Kennedy?
As an intern.
As an intern. Oh, well, we can tell Washington intern stories later. But and so from being an intern for Ted Kennedy, got you the other position? Take us through the steps that got you to the Clinton White House.
Internship for Senator Kennedy, gained some legislative experience, worked at the Congressional Research Service, where I was no longer the Canada guy, I was the gun guy. If you had questions about how firearms worked or firearms law, you could put the request in from me, from a congressional office, and I could tell you all you needed to know about bulletproof vests. Then I turned that into a job on Capitol Hill, working for a mid-level Pennsylvania congressman, and from there I moved on to the White House.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So, I guess I got to ask this question first, right? Oh, you just saw tonight completely Hollywood abridged, so I have to ask you the most important question. How was my impression of Al Gore?
I thought Al Gore does a better Al Gore than you do.
And fair enough. And so what were your tasks as the assistant to the chief of staff of Al Gore?
I had two titles. One was special assistant to the chief of staff. The other was assistant political director. In the job of assistant political director, the notion was that we would firm up public support for Vice President Al Gore. I left 2 years before the administration ended.
Right. And were you ever subpoenaed?
I was never subpoenaed.
Whew. That makes you one of the few, doesn't it?
Now, so Al Gore was pretty popular when you left 2 years before the second Clinton term ended. Then there was an election, a very close election, which he lost.
Oh, well, some would say he won.
Oh, I'm sorry. He lost. Yes, he did win the popular vote. So, but Bush became president, and then the war in Iraq started. So one could surmise that if you had stayed in a close election, you would have made the difference. We would not be mired in the Middle East.
Luckily, Chris Matthews has not made the connections quite yet.
Right.
Because otherwise you would be getting a call from Hardball.
That's correct.
So what were your sort of day-to-day tasks? I remember, I think I asked you once, or maybe I'm making this up, whether you would ever want to run for office.
I would never want to run for office, no.
And why not?
I've seen what office holders have to do, and as a staffer, I could just go home and come back the next day.
Really?
And in the Clinton White House, they had to do all kinds of things.
Right, yes. That's right.
And do you go through, like, when anybody in the Clinton White House writes a book, do you go immediately to the book at the bookstore and flip right to the index to see whether you're mentioned?
I didn't wait until I left to do that. Typically, when a book would come out while we were there, all of us would go to the bookstore as almost a party.
And it sounds like it was just the coolest job in the world. Was it?
The way I describe it to my students as a professor now is, as I say, imagine that every week is finals week, that you can't get the professors to tell you what books you're supposed to read, and if you don't get all the answers right, people could die.
Pretty much like an RSC show.
Yeah, just like. similar lives are at stake. So, Mike, well, then when you put it that way, how did you stay in the business as long as you did?
I didn't find any other job opportunities. Nobody was knocking at my door.
Right.
Because you gave us that when we met when we first did the performances at the White House, and you were good enough to give...
At the Kennedy Center.
Sorry, yes. We met when we first did our performances at the Kennedy Center, and then you said, hey, you guys should take a tour of the White House. You gave us a tour on a Monday night. I think we got to stand in the doorway of the Oval Office.
Well, and then I think you gave private tours to several different parties of our family members. You went above and beyond the call. This is like we were calling you about every 4 days, saying, hey, my second cousin Larry, I don't know what he looks like, but he's going to give you a buzz. Can you give him a special VIP tour? And you toured everybody around. You were awesome.
Well, I kept hoping that you'd give the lamps back.
eBay.
I'm Madeline Brand, host of NPR's Day to Day, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you see the RSC? The end is nigh. This is the final week of our 97-city UK tour of the Bible, the complete Word of God abridged. We only have 5 more performances left this week. The tour ends on March 28th. We play the Wave Theater in Maryport on the 24th, the Victoria Theater in Halifax, the Gateways School in Leeds on the 26th, the Floral Pavilion Theatre in Birkenhead on the 27th, and we close at the Maltings in Berwick-upon-Tweed on the 28th. Get out there, tell both your friends that these are our final performances of the Bible, the complete Word of God abridged in the UK. And in the US for the next 2 weeks, you can see Completely Hollywood abridged at the Scottsdale Center for the Performing Arts in Scottsdale, Arizona, starting Tuesday, March 24th for 2 weeks, ending on April 5th. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for details and spread the word if you have friends or loved ones in those areas. Tell them to get out. And now back to our White House insider, Mike Burton, who we met for drinks after our recent performance in Columbus, Ohio. You showed us so many back behind the scenes thing. You showed us the signing desk, Vice President Gore's signing desk, which was also Richard Nixon's desk during the Watergate era.
And I seem to recall there's a center drawer you would pull out, and traditionally all the vice presidents signed inside that drawer, where you pulled out one vice president had actually carved his name or his initials.
Yeah.
I will say the initials are DQ.
Yeah. Vice President Dairy Queen.
Yes. Yeah. Everyone else had signed. Dan Quayle.
Yeah, Dan. But Spiro Agnew never had the chance.
That's right.
He left in a huff.
And then I think you also showed us the desk where Richard Nixon's recording equipment was, and with like holes carved out so the cables could go through. Am I remembering right?
You're remembering right. It was the same desk. It was one of several placements for the recording equipment. But yeah, it was. I think it's possible I might have opened the drawer, and I think it's possible you might have put your head inside.
I really can't say.
So. So it was. I'm sorry. All right. So it was intense and like finals every week. But was it really fun and fun?
There were moments that I have to say felt truly historic. Hearing Bernard Bailyn, who is a historian of early American history, give a lecture to the president, the vice president, the first lady, the second lady, Tipper Gore, assembled academics, and I was standing alone in the blue room looking out at the monuments, hearing it piped in. I thought, sometimes this is a damn good job.
Yeah, I bet.
And what was your? Did you have much personal interaction with Al Gore or Bill Clinton?
They tried to avoid it, but it did happen. Yes.
And what about the famous Clinton charisma? I mean, I hear so many people say, you know, you can't avoid it. You meet him, you see him, he knows everybody's name. I mean, is he really as good as everybody said?
Even among staff who would see him on a frequent basis. If we would see him speak in front of a crowd, we would just still think, my Lord, it's like he's talking to me.
Yeah.
And I remember feeling if Al Gore, well, I mean now Al Gore is the Oscar-winning, Nobel Prize-winning, easygoing, you know, raconteur and man about town. I remember thinking, oh, if that Al Gore had been running for president back then, he might have won the election by more. Did you see any of the difference between the difference between the public and the private Al Gore?
The Al Gore that you describe is the Al Gore that I know, the Al Gore that I proudly served. A lot of people will say, if you do staff work, are you just in it for yourself? Are you working for real policy change? I have to say that I think it's a very staff work requires a loyalty, and I was proud to be loyal.
So, in the West Wing, which guy were you?
I never watched the show.
Really?
Yeah,
oh, really?
Didn't.
Yeah,
it
was too much like taking home.
Except the episode that you were on. That one,
yeah, I was going to say, Austin, which guy were you?
And if you can send me that DVD, I'll refresh my memory.
All right, thank you.
So you weren't Rob Lowe, you weren't Josh Lyman.
You were an extra.
So here's my question. What were some of the funniest, weirdest things that happened while you were serving in the White House? I recall one time you were telling us a story about Air Force One or Air Force Two ran off the runway and got stuck in the mud or something.
I was not on that plane. I was on the plane that successfully took off. That was...
Again, coincidence? You decide.
But that plane that got stuck in the mud was tail number 27,000, which most people will know as the plane that took Kennedy's body back to D.C. It had been in service for that long. It was one of the last surviving passenger service 707s in the world, and it had been used as a backup plane for many years. So we had used it as Air Force Two quite commonly. Its last flight in government service was the time that another plane got stuck in the mud, and it had to be called in as a backup plane. Its last moment in service was serving as Air Force One more time.
Ah,
that's cool. Very cool.
That is cool. And would you? So you're a professor of what now?
Political science.
Poli-sci at the distinguished
Ohio University.
At Ohio University. And would you ever go back into politics?
I would certainly give it some thought, but I'm very happy where I am now.
That was the biggest wink I've ever heard, I've ever seen.
Although you did tell us that this last fall you got involved in a congressional race in Pennsylvania.
I was working with Kathy Dahlkemper, a new member of Congress. She's great.
That's it for this week's Reduce Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us who you were on the West Wing via email to feedback@reduceshakespeare.com or interact with other fans at our Reduce Shakespeare Company forum or find us at facebook.com, myspace.com/reduced Shakespeare or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/reduced or become a subscriber to our channel on YouTube. Thanks as always to webmaster Matt Rippey, head twit Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and Garage Band. Our random fan shout out this week goes to Carol Nover. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to Madeline Brand, the former host of the late lamented Day to Day on National Public Radio. We'll miss you. Special thanks to Mandy Painting at Ceredigion FM in Wales for that fantastic on-air review. And thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 120th, 360th of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. I love how his answers got so terse the minute the microphone came on.
Did you notice that?
He's such a talkative fellow.
I think he's been in public service before.
he's been around an open microphone before.
See, it's just the difference from us. We won't shut up. And he knows exactly when to shut up.
That's the problem.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.